Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Welcome along to the Keith Andrews Show with you every Thursday in and around 12:30. Joining me today, Joe, you're back in the house.
Keith, Happy New Year. Here
happy
we go
New Year.
Again.
First one together, back again, until you go off on rugby duty. We don't see you for a few weeks.
Very soon, actually.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah, it should be great. Mm.
Expectations high?
Very high.
Rightly so.
Rightly so, probably, yeah. First game is against England at the Aviva Stadium, followed by Murrayfield.
And what then date we'll is the first one?
Reassess things. February 2nd.
Second, is that all right? Oh, geez, we're not far away.
No, it's on us now. It's on us, yeah.
Is that 2 weeks on Saturday?
Yeah.
Happy days. Happy days. Right, on the show today, we've got Liam Lawrence Skyping us in, so we'll chat to Liam about Stoke and Sunderland, etc. Topical this week, still, Mr. Bielsa at Leeds is bonkers. Really is bonkers. When it broke last week, we were doing the game for Sky, so the Leeds versus Derby game, and you hear it breaking the night before, so then the day of the game, and he wasn't going to speak to us before the game. Because he's clearly acted on his own. So he wanted to come out and take responsibility, but the club, I don't think, were very keen on him speaking.
Right.
So in the build-up to the game, we're kind of thinking, well, you know, it's not concrete. It's a report that's out there. The police have obviously put it out. Leeds hadn't made a statement. And then he does the interview probably about 20 minutes before we went on air. His first answer was 9.5 minutes, of which we could only show 3 because we were under time constraints.
Yeah.
And it was just like, wow. Just wow. I have never heard anything like it in all the time I've been in football. And some people think I've been quite strong in it. That's just my beliefs and my stance on the way he's gone about it. And people talk about culturally and it's acceptable where he's managed before. It's the done thing. It's not the done thing in England. It's not the done thing within our sport in Ireland. Or if it is, I am very, very naive. Mm-hmm. What's your thoughts on it?
I mean, it's definitely unethical. I don't know if I'm going as far as cheating.
Mm. I am.
Frank Lampard said cheating's a big word. I don't know what rule he's broken. Mm.
I don't think he has broken a rule.
Know what rule he's broken. So maybe they charge him with bringing the game into disrepute or something along those lines.
Fairness, yeah, the spirit of the game or whatever terminology they want to use.
His honesty has made me warm to him massively.
Yeah.
You know, it makes it feel less like skullduggery. It makes him feel a little less shifty. Mm. He just has disarmed everyone, I think. Mm. His press conference yesterday went on for 70 minutes.
It was phenomenal. PowerPoint presentation.
He went, you know the way you thought I was just cheating against Derby? No, I was actually cheating against everyone. So, I mean, every journalist in the room was about to go, oh, okay.
Nobody actually got a question. It was literally 70 minutes of proper, this is what we do. Sean, we can see it on the screen now. This is the presentation he was going through, the individuals, the opposition, the level of detail, the amount of hours they spend on each and every team. What I would say, you must have a severe amount of manpower and employees to be able to do that to that in-depth. I think the general public have been blown away by the level of detail.
That's the thing, yeah.
I haven't really been. I have been surprised with maybe a certain percentage of that, but you know, you're going into games, you do watch a ridiculous amount of footage of the opposition.
Every single game from last season. That's what he's doing.
Yeah, but that's on a different scale. That's on a different spectrum. And that's when I'm going back to the manpower. Most clubs at championship level haven't got that at their disposal. You would expect that from the top clubs, a team, a room like this of analysis, working closely together, working on the systems, the players, putting reports together for these type of players. Like we would have done it at MK Dons at a much lower level.
Yeah.
Even within the Ireland underage teams, you get your hand on whatever footage you can and you just try and build a picture. But the level he has gone to is extraordinary.
See, this is all beautiful now, okay? So ironically, for the man who was sending people to spy on other teams, I feel like Bielsa is the most honest man I think I've ever come across. Secondly, Leeds have a massive siege mentality now for the rest of the season. It's played beautiful. And thirdly, if you talk to anyone today and say, what do you make of the Bielsa stuff? The first thing they're saying is, man, he's impressively hardworking. The detail they go into. The myth of Bielsa actually has just grown here. Yeah. So you're in the minority when you're saying, you know, this is disgusting. I think that was the word you used. Yeah. Disgusting. I'm outraged. I think most people are saying, well, okay, look, it's unethical. Of course he would have got some advantage by seeing how they were setting up the day before, would have known who was in, who was out, maybe would have seen some set pieces. It is unethical. It's not ideal. Mm. There is an element of skullduggery, but most people are thinking,
I think there's a misconception of what I'm thinking about Leeds and what I'm thinking about him. Mm. So I don't agree with what he's done and frequently done, obviously, which has now come out in the last 24 hours. What I love about him is that intensity that he works at and the detail he goes into to try and basically all those hours that he spends and his management and his coaching staff, etc., working behind the scenes as soon as training's over, lunch, you would imagine just them being in a bunker. You could imagine them not even sleeping. I have nothing but admiration for the way that he does that. Mm-hmm. And I totally agree about the siege mentality, because everybody associated with Leeds is just going to laugh at him. They're going to love him even more. He is already, or was already, on a massive pedestal because of what he's done at that football club. It has been phenomenal. Mm. Because he hasn't actually spent that much money. And the two signings that he's made for money, Douglas left back, okay, he's played, not to the level I don't think he played at Wolves, and Bamford has been injured for the vast majority of the season. He has done it with a similar set of players that were already in the building.
Yeah.
And he's implemented the younger players coming from the academy,
yeah,
which is a gamble.
No, he's done a phenomenal job. Can I put it to you that there is a real element of hypocrisy here in all the outrage across football? So Frank Lampard sat in a dressing room before a quarterfinal against Bayern Munich a couple of years ago, quarterfinal against Bayern, where his manager skulked in a laundry basket. He was banned for both games. He should not have been there. Mm. That is a massive advantage to have your coach there at halftime as well. Mm. So able to communicate with the players at halftime.
Is that 100% that happened?
100%.
Is it?
Came really? In a laundry basket. Banned, okay? So Frank Lampard and his ethics on that particular occasion, they quietened down. You know, his conscience, he seemed to quell that for those 90 minutes somehow, okay? And all we see...
He didn't have a say in that though, Joe, in
regardless,
fairness to him.
Regardless.
But he's up. Whether he agrees, doesn't agree. Those players at that time with Mourinho, sure, would have ran through brick walls for him.
No, I understand that. My point is he's on his high horse now.
Yeah.
Okay? So, and my point is anyone in football who's on their high horse needs to have a look at the general conduct of footballers. A ball goes out over the line for a throw. Both players, hands in the air. Players dive.
The only thing I agree.
Players dive. Yeah. Players claim penalties that aren't penalties. They claim corners that aren't corners. They use every trick in the book. It's just this one, for whatever reason, culturally. This one is for me,
which doesn't sit well with me. They were saying Jose and the laundry basket and the hidden earpiece. I didn't know that was absolutely definitive, but if it is, I think that's brilliant.
So you're a hypocrite too?
No, let me finish.
No, you're a hypocrite. We can
funny,
move on.
Though, it's funny. No, we don't want to move on.
Sorry, you think a fella with a binoculars watching the train
is not funny? What I'm saying
is,
I just think that's funny. Like, I did think it was hilarious. I did as well.
Okay.
But then anger set in and I was thinking if I was the opposition.
Your default emotion of anger?
Yeah, probably. Probably more
Sorry,
often than
go
not.
Sorry, I'm interrupting you.
The ball going over the line, the diving I detest anyway. And that's come in more and more in recent years. But with those instances on the pitch, they're heated a moment. They're not premeditated. His is premeditated. Rightly or wrongly, in his head, in terms of, am I breaking the law? Is it illegal? All these stances we're hearing from the Leeds camp, Leeds fans, Leeds press, and a lot of people, pundits, reporters, etc. It's torn. But I just think because it's premeditated, and he doesn't need to do it, because the detail he would have got on Thursday watching Derby train for the Friday game would have been Harry Wilson wasn't training. 90% chance he's not going to be playing because he hadn't been featuring in the couple of games before that. So their set pieces, what did they pick up? Did they do set pieces? If it's an 11v11, I said to you inside, where Leeds have struggled this year was when teams have gone with a game plan, a real defensive, pragmatic game plan of sitting back, sitting low, sitting deep. And then if they have the personnel to really go and counter-attack with pace, with a bit of adventure and a bit of zest in their play, they have caused Leeds problems because they are open. They play open, expansive, but they are very organised on that turnover possession, right? But if he sees in training, look, they're going to go and press us, they're going to go and... Then it's a different instruction before the game, whereas they didn't. They came with a bit of a medium block. I think it really affected Derby County, by the way, and we didn't get a true reflection of them at all.
Yeah.
Which was a shame, because the ingredients were there for a brilliant game. Whereas Leeds, the way it didn't affect Marcelo Bielsa in the build-up, in the interview, it didn't affect his players. Whereas Frank Lampard visibly was annoyed.
Fuming.
He was raging.
Yeah. And actually,
and that fed into the players. It disrupted it.
Big test for him as a manager. How do I handle this huge occasion? He could feel the glare of the media on him. Look, I totally, look, is it unethical? Yes. I'm surprised there's not a rule. Maybe they just, they never needed a rule before this. Of course it's unethical. Of course it was an advantage. I'm not outraged by it. It shouldn't happen again. He should take whatever punishment he gets. What's just been really striking is how, could any man have handled the fallout from this any better than Marcelo Bielsa?
No, I agree. Yeah. And like yesterday, one of the lads actually texted me, I was out about yesterday afternoon, a press conference called for 5 o'clock. What's it going to be? Is he had enough? Is he not happy with this backlash? Because he's got history.
The Guardian reported he was going to leave.
Did they report that, right? Because he's got history of walking. If things aren't right or if things don't sit well, I mean, he's done it at a previous club, so it's not as if he needs the finances of it. He should be commended for dropping into the Championship, because I'm convinced he would have got a Premier League thing, but he's seen the history, seen whatever was right, the owners, the players, etc. Leeds, and he's done it, and he's been remarkably well. I just want to show, a few years ago when I was at MK Dons, this is probably 3 years ago this month, I think it was, tour around the FA Cup, and the level of detail we would have gone to, so I've mentioned about the manpower available. So going into the game, we had been promoted from League One into the Championship. It was a bit of a struggle that year in terms of finances, players, etc., and what we had at our disposal. So this would have been the analyst of the first team going through different areas. So it's a document put together, the previous teams that Chelsea would have played, the personnel, reading up on, you know, potential injuries, the relevance of resting players. We talked, John Terry at the time would have been rested. He subsequently wasn't. They played a very, very strong team. So basically all this is trying to portray an image, a story to the players. Within the dressing room, there would have been a couple of iPads where, not so much on Chelsea, but this report was on Chelsea, where the individual players, the strengths, the weaknesses, what foot do they take it on, what angle do they try and make the runs if they're an attacking player, do they run in behind, do they come short, midfield players, holding midfield players. So at the time it was Matic and, I've got the team here.
Okay.
No, big, strong, Mikel. So Matic and Mikel, Mourinho was the manager.
Wasn't a fan of Mikel.
No, either was I, but it was a very strong structured team. Fabregas used to play as a 10. So instructions for our players in terms of where Fabregas drops deep, we wanted someone to lock onto him because we were more worried about what he did on the ball than Matic or Mikel, for obvious reasons. Again, in the final tour, the areas or the build-up play of what they would do in terms of they did this little movement where they would try and play from the back, it wasn't on, they would go up, they would condense the area, and on the far side of the pitch, and Azpilicueta, who was playing left back that season, would drop into an area and he would get them playing, and then the team would spring out from that. Or on the flip side, the way they pressed us from our goal kicks, if our number six, because we liked to play from the back too much at that time in my opinion, because confidence was quite low, Darren Potter, I don't know if you know the name, played a couple of games for Ireland, he would have been the six, get on the ball. When the opposition used to do that for Chelsea in the build-up, Matic would release and he would go and press that. So then Mikel would be left with two central midfielders, which he would split. We would do a little movement to run him off and try and clip a ball into our number 10, into those type of areas. So what I'm just getting at with this is the level of detail of a bottom of the table in terms of budget Championship team with two analysts, two members of the coaching staff, myself and Richard Barker were the assistant, and this was the level, accompanied with little videos in the team meetings in the 2 days, 3 day build up to the game to try and portray what we have seen collectively from Chelsea in probably realistically six games condensed into a 15 minute clip, this that they can read at their leisure, individual player reports, etc. So that's the same league as what Leeds are in now. For him to do the level of what he's done is obviously in a different level.
But he was saying they'll spend 4 hours on a game, and on average they've done 50 games of a given team.
So 200 hours.
Do the maths there. 200 hours by how many teams?
Yeah.
You know, it's a huge amount of work. I think it's one of the reasons why Bielsa will emerge from this unscathed, in that, yes, it's unethical, as we said, but it's part of such a wider work ethic that actually...
You cannot question his work ethic. Yeah, it's phenomenal.
So he's not just relying...
No, I don't. On teams. I'm not saying that at all.
It's not like you can put the Bielsa magic down to this.
No chance.
This is a 1-2 percenter of
that. In my opinion, he doesn't need.
No, totally. And well, he had. I thought he's a philosophical guy and interesting fella. And he said, "Why did I send someone to watch them?" He said, "Just because I thought I wasn't violating the norm." Fair enough. I suspect he would have thought he might be violating the norm. But he said, watching the opponents allows us to have less anxiety, and in my case, I am stupid enough to allow this kind of behaviour. So it's just this sense he wants to cover all bases, you know? But I mean, does anyone now look at Bielsa and think you can reduce his brilliance down to the fact that he spies and trains?
No, nowhere near.
So I think that is why, ultimately, this this is kind of, you know, it's a bit funny, it's a bit of skullduggery, but actually, you know, once he stops doing it, which you suspect he will from this week.
Do you?
Yeah, well... I don't know. But you suspect, you know, it doesn't taint him.
I think it does a little bit.
Yeah.
But I don't think I think you're totally spot on in terms of 1%, 2%, whatever the margins are. You've got to look at what he does on a day-to-day basis with those players. I've already mentioned about this, basically, the same squad.
Yeah.
Players like Liam Cooper, Ayling, Kamara Roof, Calvin Phillips, their performance levels have gone through the roof.
Oh, he's done a phenomenal job. Look, it is a big advantage. I mean, we're going to get on to the Man United Spurs game, I know. And so what Solskjaer sprung on Spurs in that first half in particular, if Pochettino had seen the Manchester United training sessions in Dubai, then United would not have won that game.
Yeah.
So I'm not underplaying the fact that it's a huge advantage and that, you know, you would be very angry if you're Derby County. I just think the way he's disarmed everyone with his brutal, direct honesty.
It's just unheard of.
It's weird for anyone in any upper office in life, not just in sport, but just to come out and say, okay, look, here's the absolute truth. So everyone, no one knows what to do.
Yeah. The lad spoke to Tim Vickery this morning on AM.
He'd be a Bielsa fan, I would
say. Yeah, Bielsa fan, and he's obviously based in Brazil. He would have seen a lot of them down through the years, covering his international reign, club football. And yeah, let's have a listen to what Tim said, because he was rubbing his palms together.
Yeah, well, I am English, and I've spent the last few days laughing at Morecambe and Wise and listening to Madness. You can't get much more English than that. But, you know, 25 years on the other side of the Atlantic have given me a little bit of a perspective. And I think maybe there are two great gifts that England has given to the world. One is football, and two is hypocrisy. and both of them come together with the Marcelo Bielsa story.
Yeah, it's amazing. One of the things that strikes me now is just how successful he's been and how quickly he's been successful in English football, that it's weird, and it's a knock on English football that nobody has thought to get this guy involved up to this point.
Yeah, perhaps, although the big test is coming. Bielsa's few league titles, when they came in Argentina, when Argentina was playing the very short season, just the teams playing each other once, 19 games. In his previous times in Europe, because it's a very, very intense method of play, really intense. You've got to run. You know, if you're going to press the opposition in their half of the field, it's a physically exhausting type of football. And we've seen both with Bilbao and with Marseille that the side started very, very well, but really physically they ran out of steam in the business end of the season. So it's going to be very, very interesting to judge Bielsa's work with Leeds from kind of mid-February on. You know, business end of the season, when you really need the points, how much will his Leeds team still have in the tank? And I think we need to defer judgment until then, because that's always been his stumbling block in Europe. Let's see if he falls over that one more time.
So it's important to say Tim Vickery's a dude.
Lovely glasses.
Yeah. If you're listening on the podcast, you've missed out there. Are there any signs of Leeds slowing down?
No, and these would have been my reservations, because he comes in, and as soon as someone of that magnitude comes in, okay, I kind of seen his Atletico Bilbao sides and looked at them thinking brilliant, knew that they blew up, that can happen. You start delving into a little bit more, and there's a little bit of history of this happening towards the latter stages of the season because of his intensity, his training methods, mentally as well, not just physically. So I would be very much in that camp, and I've made that case for much of the season, that I would be surprised, even last week, with them being scintillating against Derby County. They'd had a break the week before. He rested a lot of players from the FA Cup, out of the FA Cup. I still think they need to add in this window a couple of three, four maybe additions to ease the burden, because they're picking up a lot of injuries, and you can only assume that that's down to
the rigours
of what he demands. If he does manage to do it, what an achievement, because I don't think any team will have got out of the Championship playing with such style. Mm. We've had some good ones. Mm. Wolves, obviously, last year, Fulham, Bournemouth a few years ago, Swansea, teams like that, but this is on a different level because of the level of player and the lack of investment, really, that he's made. So it would be a staggering achievement, but I still have my reservations.
Okay.
Right, Man United, Spurs.
Yeah.
What were your thoughts on the game? What were your thoughts going into the game? So we sat here last week with Kev, and we were kind of saying, what I was saying was, I thought it was a little bit disrespectful towards Solskjaer, that people were saying, well, you know, five games, he should have won them. It's kind of expected. Well, I wasn't expecting it. It was still a big achievement to, all right, shackles are off. People use that term, and he's just letting them go and play. Yeah. There was more going into it than that. He would have been working with the analysts and the coaches, and with all due respect to those five teams that he played, they are better than them, so they can just go and play to a degree and be wary of certain areas where the opposition are strong, or look at areas that they can really get at. But this was their big test, and the way he changed it in playing with the diamond and matching Pochettino's team up was very, very impressive in the first half.
My thoughts going into it were, initially he's just changed the whole mood of the club brilliantly. You know, as a United fan growing up, Solskjaer just exemplified everything great about
good
that
about
era.
It,
you know, just a good guy. But so he initially changed the mood in there. I thought almost instantly he managed to restore the values of the club. Now, I know that can be pretentious and sound pretentious, and non-Manchester United supporting people will roll their eyes. Mm. But there are values and traditions at the club that go back to Busby. And they have always played with pace and flair and tried to attack, and that counts for something. And it was amazing, you know, watching under Van Gaal and then Mourinho, I thought, well, is that, maybe it is, maybe the tradition, maybe that is nothing more than just the brilliance of Ferguson, and actually that will disappear. But instantly Solskjaer identified the Matas and Fellainis and just said, that's not
that's the not way we want to go,
and it's not the traditional way the club play. And it was striking to me how quickly he restored a sense of what Manchester United should be, you know? And Gary Neville made the point, and I thought it was well made, that no longer should any manager be allowed to come into Manchester United and just take away the DNA, like a Van Gaal or a Mourinho did. So I thought it was incredible how quickly he restored those values and those traditions, and there was a sense of, that's the direction the club has to go in now. It can't deviate from that again, because it just hasn't worked. And when a club is as rich as Manchester United and they can buy pace and buy talent, there's no reason not to play that way. Mm. And then going into the game, I thought he's done those two things brilliantly, the morale and then this sense of identity again restored. It's going to be really interesting to see, is there a tactical sophistication there? He's going up against the heir apparent in Pochettino.
Yeah.
What's he going to do? And I must say, I thought, I'm worried if they just go all out attack again. And if it's just as simple as pass the ball forward and make forward runs, which seemed to be the tone of what he had been saying,
basic terms.
And equally, I thought, well, if they just sit back Mourinho style, they don't really have a team who can do that either.
I thought they'd going in, I thought, I didn't anticipate playing a diamond. I thought it would be a 4-3-3 type system, and they would have to come to some kind of compromise of an ability to sit in and at times respect Spurs because they're a good side with talented individuals. But then what do they do going forward with the pace and energy that we know that they have, and the way he's wanted to go, because you mentioned Mata, even Fellaini. Lukaku to a degree.
Lukaku now knows. That's the other thing, actually, talking with Nathan and Brian Kerr in commentary. We've had 3 years of Mourinho not knowing his best team. Mm. We were actually able to pretty much predict what most of the personnel. Who was going to play. Yeah. Okay, the shape caught everyone. Mm. But actually, with 3 years into Mourinho, we're saying, what's the best team?
Exactly,
you now have a good feel for what the best United team is. That's not easy to figure out. He's doing a million different things over the last couple of weeks, and he's managed to figure out the best team. I thought it would be a mishmash, you know, whereas actually there was a real clear plan.
It was a clear plan, and the time away in Dubai where they were obviously helped in terms of being able to work specifically on this plan. So if we've got Spurs in white here, obviously, and Trippier on the ball, for instance. The way United set up was with Martial and Rashford playing as a split centre forward pair. Now, it's clever because, and this is the way you would try and contain a lot. There's a lot of talk in football about it's hard to get two players, it's hard to get two up front. But if you've got players like this, they can play wide, we know that. In theory, you can play as two split strikers and they should be able to contain a back four. Mm-hmm. So that there and that there causes a much more of a problem for the opposition back four than more of a central two, where you're thinking, okay, the ball's on this side. And in my opinion, this is what should have happened. We know Spurs have been playing a diamond recently, so you're very strong in the width of the 18-yard box, stroke 6-yard box. That's where they like to go and play. And the width is provided by the fullbacks. Trippier on the right, Rose on the left-hand side, for Tonga and Alderweireld at the back. As this happens, the Trippier comes forward. This is what I think, Shat, and it's very basic. You can't be up high and wide as well. You have to come back to make a 3v2 because you're playing against two very, very talented, quick centre-forwards, Martial and Rashford. That didn't happen.
Yeah.
He was still in this type of area where he's never going to be able to recover. Harry Winks and Lingard also was an issue because Lingard is bright, he's intelligent. You've seen it for the one where he nicked possession, where he comes back into an area, nicks it, and then Rashford's in this type of area for the goal. They just didn't react quick enough to what Manchester United set up to do. And Spurs weren't respectful enough.
No. I must say I was very surprised. So you're looking at Pochettino now as maybe the heir apparent. And so you're watching everything he does very closely. There were a few occasions in the first 20, 30 minutes where it was 2-on-2.
Yeah.
And Rashford and Martial against Vertonghen and Alderweireld, you don't need to point out which two were the faster. Yeah. Like, it was dangerous. I think there was a point where Martial was almost in early on. And so two or three occasions, certainly two, where it was 2v2.
Yeah.
And I thought, surely Pochettino is going to say to Davies or to Trippier, just one of you hang back. That's not a complicated message.
Yeah.
Let's keep it 3v2.
Yeah.
So I actually came away from that game, yes, thinking Solskjaer, I think Neville used the phrase, caught him out.
Mm.
But I mean, I came away thinking, why did Pochettino not react to that? Is it just because they're at home and he felt almost...
It was too gung-ho. It was too open. And it was end-to-end. But if you looked at United's fullbacks on the flip side of that, playing the same system, obviously, difference was the split strikers. Spurs played more of a Kane and Son goes roaming, I suppose. But their fullbacks were actually quite conservative. So their centre-halves were well protected.
Yeah.
And obviously Matic in front in terms of an enforcer, a defensive head, is a different kettle of fish to Harry Winks on the flip side, who is a ball player. He's a recycler of possession. Matic is aware of that. So even balls into the front two, he's screening it, whereas Winks gets attracted to the ball. And it was a poor 45 minutes from them. But on the flip side of that, it changed quite quick in the second half. But then Solskjaer reacted to that.
They both went 4-2-3-1. Is that right in the second half?
Both in the second half. Spurs clearly had the better of the second half. David De Gea produced 11 saves, I think, in 45 minutes. But it was very rare, even from the off, to see a diamond against a diamond.
Mm.
Like I'm a big fan within football games of, if I was in charge of a team, the ability to change. So teams, your personnel, knowing different systems. So to be able to flip from that or flip back, I think causes opposition big, big problems. But you're right in terms of Pochettino in the first half.
It was odd because strange. It was so simple, wasn't it?
And with all due respect, anybody watching it was like, okay, you're getting into good areas, you're brilliant in these type of areas. But really?
Yeah.
Really? Ball into here, Lingard nicks it, Pogba's got the ability to find that ball.
Yeah.
You really want that?
I was surprised because it's almost so glaring. You know what I mean? Like if a Leinster Senior League were 2v2.
Is that stubbornness though, is that? Because you're right, he has to have seen it. And especially that one, whatever about Alderweireld, pace here, Vertonghen up against Rashford here. By the way, I thought Lloris should have done better for the goal. I thought that was a big difference in the sides of all the two goalkeepers.
Yeah. But look, Spurs should have still won 2 or 3-1. I accept that. So before you come away saying, look, Solskjaer did really well. However, the second half, you saw the gulf between the two teams. But I just thought it was, from a Manchester United point of view, they gave Spurs huge respect in how they set up. But it was really encouraging to see they still had a threat.
Yeah.
Because too often under Mourinho, they've set up well.
Not personnel, wouldn't it? If he had gone with a diamond, what would have happened would have been, say we bring it back and Trippier's here when we're talking about splitting the back four, what Mourinho would have expected would have been you track him back.
Yeah.
And then your threat of the counter-attack's gone. Yeah. Then it's easy. Then it's okay. There's your 2v1.
And then when Pogba gets the ball, what does he do?
Yeah.
Kicks it up to one man.
That's a difficult one because one contests it, one sweeps behind, and it's a lot easier.
Yeah.
Whereas that takes balls to say stay up, and we will deal with that man for man in midfield. Our back four comes a little bit more compact, and we might sacrifice a little bit of possession in this type of areas.
Yeah.
But what we're not going to do is engage in here, engage higher up, and leave all these spaces here for.
Yeah, because and balls is the word, because early on Spurs got in around here.
Yeah.
Do you remember? Mm. And so I'm sure Solskjaer sat there and thought, oh my God, these are good.
Yeah.
Will I tell Marcus Rashford to come back and help out?
Yeah.
I love that he didn't.
Yeah.
Right? I love that he said,
it's in his DNA though. You're talking about the club DNA.
Totally.
It's in his DNA. And he's even saying as soon as he comes into that building, the level of players that he's working with.
Yeah.
People are quick to say, Cardiff, you need to manage in a certain way because of what you've got to work with.
Yeah.
Player-wise, ability-wise, you have to play in a 4-5-1 at times, going away from home. Or...
Yeah. Look, it's been 6 years of misery and really just dull football, slow football. That's how I'd characterise Manchester United over the last 6 years. It's slow.
Yeah.
So I love that Solskjaer, who's trying to get this job and could be tempted to try and let a nil-all draw wouldn't be the worst here.
Yeah.
I love that he said to Rashford after that Spurs got in first here, stay up.
Yeah.
Let's have a go.
Yeah.
And for those reasons, he deserved his bit of luck. So look, I'd be massively encouraged.
Yeah.
Bit disappointed in Spurs, but I just think it's great.
Still think Pochettino's the man for the job, though.
On balance, he probably is. But honestly, there'll be a huge...
Can't do it. What more can he do at the moment?
Oh, I know. But
one more can Solskjaer do. I think he's been phenomenal.
There'll be a huge... I mean, PSG...
Breath of fresh air.
The PSG game will be very important, obviously. Yeah. But... I'd say there's just a huge groundswell around Old Trafford now of, do you know what? This club has lost its identity.
Mm.
This is someone who gets the identity. There is a clear line here from Solskjaer to Ferguson, almost to Busby. You feel like Ferguson and Busby were connected in some ways.
Yeah.
Why not try that?
Mm.
And it's not rational. Like, it's a more romantic version of things. But that groundswell
will be
around
Old Trafford.
They've
gone rational in the last couple of appointments to a degree.
Point.
Definitely with
Mourinho.
Mourinho, in terms of they went away massively from the DNA of the football club and the philosophy of the football club, and they went for, okay, we need results.
Yeah.
This fella's a proven winner, and obviously that.
If they're looking at a director of football long term, someone like Solskjaer ticks a few boxes there.
Yeah,
he understands football. Mm. He understands the club. He's an ambassadorial figure.
Yeah,
you know.
Mm. Yeah, it's looking good, and I fly over every weekend, as you know, and you bump into United fans, Liverpool fans, whatever type of flight area I'm going from, and the atmosphere amongst them has just transformed.
Yeah.
Like, literally, they were coming back, certainly towards the tail end of Mourinho the last few months. Oh, my God.
You wouldn't
watch it. Literally feeling sorry for them.
You couldn't watch
the
games.
These lads are paying to go over here and watch this.
Yeah. I mean, look, he's going to lose some games 3-2, but that'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. Totally agree. Right, let's move on to Championship Matters. I know it's your favourite show. You snob. We wanted to get him on last week, but his lad wasn't very well, I don't think. We've got him on this week. Liam Lawrence joins us on Skype, I believe. Liam, you there, pal?
I am, yeah. Can you hear me?
You chilling, pal?
Yeah, just sat back, just relaxing.
Your lad's all right. He wasn't well last week, was he?
Yeah, no, he's all right. The other one's a little bit under the weather, though, so... But they'll be all right.
Yeah, okay, good stuff. Right, want to chat to you about Stoke City. Made the decision. I know you watch a lot of their games. You write in the local paper in Stoke, the Stoke Sentinel. And you've been... Look, we did the first game of the season, actually, together. And on paper that day, I made the point, this is one of the best Championship teams I've seen. Because on paper, it was phenomenal. I thought they'd added a few good signings, wasn't so sure about other ones. And subsequently, they signed Ashley Williams and Martina from Everton, which I didn't particularly like, in addition going into a back four with Shawcross. But I think it's fair to say you've seen this coming in terms of Gary Rowett kind of leaving the building and a change needing to be made.
Yeah, I've covered a lot over the last 16 months, you know, doing the local comms on the radio and stuff, so since I've finished playing, I've managed to get down quite a lot. Look, whoever got the job when Rowett got it, I don't think they quite realised the task in hand. You know, it's been in a downward spiral now for what, 2 years. And it's just not getting any better. I mean, Rowett had a spell just before Christmas where they went, I think it was 10 unbeaten. And you're sort of thinking, right, okay, they've turned a corner, if you like, but the wheels came off at Christmas and just after, and, you know, he ended up getting the chop. So they turned towards Nathan Jones, and, you know, his first two games in charge have not gone as expected.
No, Liam, bring us back a couple of years ago, because I would have seen you at games when I would go and commentate on the Premier League games on a Saturday. And I was critical of Stoke, and where I was critical of was the way the club had gone from when Tony Pulis was in charge. You knew exactly what way the team would play, like it, not like it. The players were brought in to play in a certain fashion. When Mark Hughes took over, I think there was a big outcry from fans to change the style of play. I don't think it ever worked. And in particular, during that time, some of the recruitment made by the club, by the manager, exactly how that works out in terms of the strength of the manager towards the board and recruitment areas, I'm not entirely sure. But the recruitment over that sustained period, they have wasted a serious amount of money, haven't they?
They have. And you go back to what you were first saying about the identity of the club. I remember when we played Hughes when you was at Blackburn, you know, in our first year in the Premier League, and we were sort of a horrible place to go, weren't we? And you never really looked forward to coming and playing us. And over the years, they just seem to go away from that identity, if you like. And I suppose you've got to be careful what you wish for as supporters sometimes. You know, you want to see, everyone wants to see attacking, free-flowing football, but to go away from that Stoke mould, and as they've gradually done that over the years, teams are now coming to Stoke, and it's not like they're thinking how they used to think. They just can roll up now and play their own way. They don't have to worry about what Stoke are doing. And we've seen it, you know, week in, week out. Now teams are just coming to Stoke and turning Stoke over. They're so soft in the underbelly, it's untrue.
So in terms of Gary Rowett then, the way he went about it, the signings he made, I remember again, going back to the first game of the season, you were saying, no, I'm not quite sure about this right from the off. You had clearly identified, you'd seen a bit of him in pre-season as well, I think, and wasn't quite right. Gary Rowett's come out in the last couple of days. I think he did an interview with somewhere in England, a radio station, and he's basically saying, you know, he was very disappointed in some of the players in terms of how they adapted to playing in the Championship, and basically some of them didn't want to be there.
No, some of the, going back to what you said again, some of the signings that they've made have been poor. And not just this year, but over the last 2 or 3 years, I don't think they've done their homework on the sort of characters they're getting in the building. I mean, that's what Tony Pulis was an expert at. You know, he did so much homework on players and their family life and what sort of character they were. I just don't think that's the case anymore. And it's the people above management that have got to be held accountable now. So no, they keep doing it.
So it's the Coates family. Son took over in the last year or two, didn't he? To relinquish some of the responsibility from Peter Coates. So where does it lie in terms of the recruitment? Do you know what type of role there is, or is the manager allowed to be heavily involved? Because you look at someone like James McLean, and for a fact Gary Rowett wanted him at Derby. That didn't happen. So he clearly wanted James in the building, got that one done. But does the manager have sole responsibility?
I don't think at Stoke they do anymore. I mean, I know Tony Pulis used to sign, they used to be his players. He'd make the signings. I know when I signed, I went and met him and we were face to face. There was no chief exec involved. You know, they just sort of did that with the agents. You know, all that business, what goes on there. But, you know, there's rumours now that I think it's the chief scout Cartwright and people around him that are bringing the signings to the manager and bringing players in the building, and it just hasn't worked at all.
Two managers in, I think it was the guts of 12 years between Tony Pulis, Mark Hughes, and the next of all, you've got in the space of 12 months, including Eddie Nizicki as the caretaker manager, four managers, all different traits, all different characters, all different ways of playing. So again, within that falls a couple of transfer windows. Nathan Jones comes in. You mentioned they lost their first two games against Brentford last week in the league, FA Cup against Shrewsbury. I know he made a lot of changes. Mm-hmm. How has that appointment been received by the Stoke fans?
They've actually sort of took it well. You know, it was a bit of a shock to the system at first, you know, with obviously the usual names getting touted around, Allardyce and Moyes and stuff. But yeah. the fans actually took it well. You know, they understand now that the club's in transition. For me, it has been for over a year, 2 years now. I think it needs to hit bottom, which I think it's doing now, and look up again, because, you know, there wasn't much known about Nathan Jones, if you like, at this level. He's obviously done a fantastic job in League Two and League One. There's no doubt about that. And the Luton fans couldn't speak highly enough of him. But, you know, this is Stoke City now. This is an ex-Premier League club. It's got a lot of expectation, and we'll see if he's up to the job.
Yeah. Like, what are the expectations? Nathan's someone I worked with at Brighton, and I really, really like him as a fella. And I'm with you in terms of the job that he's done at Luton and the way that they've played. Mentioned about the previous managers. Nathan will come in and want to play in a certain way, but I think he certainly recently he's favoured playing a diamond in midfield. We've just been chatting about it. I'm not quite sure where James McLean fits into that diamond, but that's another part. But in terms of the expectations, what are they of the fans?
Well, they want to be back in the Premier League. I know, like, we've spoke about the team on paper at the start of the season. Everyone was saying they're going to win the league, they're going to get promoted. But I think there's that many problems underlying at the club, and there's such a dark cloud over the club, you know, the last 2 years. It's going to be very difficult, and it was always going to be difficult to do it in their first season back in the Champ. I mean, you know yourself, teams don't get promoted on paper, do they?
No.
Not from the Championship.
Where I mentioned there, James, in terms of the diamond. You know, we got left out the first game against Brentford last Saturday. Where does he fit into that for you?
Well, I feel a little bit sorry for the lad, to be honest, because when he's come in under Rowett likes to play a 4-3-3, if you like. So McLean was sort of playing as a left forward.
Yeah.
But James McLean's been a left out-and-out winger all his career, isn't he? You stick him on the left wing, you know what you're going to get from him. And it sort of square pegs round holes for me with poor old James. And, you know, the diamond coming in now, I don't see where he's going to fit into this. But for me, in the Championship, a diamond, I think it's a risk. You know, not many teams play a diamond, and I've not seen many teams get out of the league playing a diamond.
Before you go, I just want to ask you about the scandal at Leeds, Mr. Bielsa. What were your thoughts on that?
Hey, to be fair to him, it's a breath of fresh air that he's just come out so openly and honest and said, yeah, I did it, so what? You know, but it's obviously upset Lampard and a few other people, but it's been going on for years. You know yourself, other managers know the other team. Sometimes on a Friday, players speak to their mates and things get out and get leaked, but to send someone to the training ground and, you know, hide in the trees, it's a new one for me, that.
I don't think Tony Pulis even did that, did he?
We once had someone trying to watch us at an away game. We were, I think it was a Tuesday, and we'd gone on a Tuesday morning out onto a pitch at a hotel to do some shape, and there was some people watching. So a few lists stopped the session, sent two of the coaches over, and these people wouldn't leave. So he storms over and sort of gives them a bit of stick, and then they soon left. Like,
that doesn't surprise me. Liam, listen, thanks for taking the call, pal. We'll touch in with you again soon.
No problem. Thank you, pal.
Yes, he's not too bothered about it.
No one is.
James McLean. I am, Joe, okay? I am. And I think you should respect my feelings. James McLean and the Diamonds.
I'm sure you set of headphones on him.
Yeah, aren't they? He's a gamer.
Okay.
You weren't in the last time we had him on. Obviously, the lads were like blown away by the quality of the Skype. And normally they're having to talk people through it and whatever.
He's got a moving camera.
Yeah. But you got on that as well, didn't you? The lads were like, this is amazing. I was like, I don't really care. James with the diamond and the way that he likes to play. He likes technical players in that diamond system. And
James is a knock it by him and get to the end line.
James is a winger. He is a winger. He likes grass in front of him, up and down. He'll work hard. He'll get in at the far post and score important goals. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see, excuse me, what way that pans out in the coming weeks for James. Right, where are we going? Okay, we're going across the Midlands into Nottingham.
Okay.
Yeah, I have to say I was surprised.
Why?
Not surprised to see Martin Hill back in work, obviously, because I think his reputation in England didn't take as much of a dent as it did in Ireland.
No, not at all. They didn't have to sit through the games.
Yeah, and even yesterday, who was it? Sky Sports News last night, Peter Shilton, who had played with Martin at Forest, was making the point that, you know, what was he supposed to do with Ireland? Yeah. They just simply haven't got the players. And he even made the point, you know, he's got a transfer window now. He's got players. And he's going to take over a talented Nottingham Forest team that are literally a few points outside the playoffs. Mm. The aspirations, the ambition of that club are huge. They've invested significantly in that squad.
Yeah.
So I think it's a really good opportunity for him. But why I'm surprised is because the relationship between the owner and Karanka had deteriorated drastically. I'm led to believe that he likes to have a little say in who plays.
Ooh.
That I don't think will go down particularly well.
No.
With Martin O'Neill. But obviously the romantic, nostalgic side of it, being a club legend from his playing days and winning the European Cup.
Did he?
Apparently. It's I think it's divided opinion amongst fans even.
Has it? Okay.
But massive opportunity for him.
It's great. I mean, the money. So O'Neill is at the opposite end of the spectrum to Bielsa in terms of preparation. It struck me that Ireland played their very best football at Euro 2016 when the players were together every day. They were effectively like a club. They were probably developing patterns of play and partnerships on the pitch just in training, just through regularity. So it strikes me O'Neill is much better. O'Neill's style is much better suited to club than international. So he could go in there and oversee things and they won't look as disjointed because they're together every day.
Well, his last club job was Sunderland, obviously, and that's probably the blot on his copybook in terms of his club management. I agree.
Before that, in fairness, this issue in that football has changed quite a lot in the last 10 years and the preparation has changed. But before Sunderland, his record is fairly phenomenal.
Yeah.
It really is. Mm. So it's a real chance for him to rehabilitate his career in our eyes almost, you know? Because it was funny, I was reading Daniel Taylor's piece in the Guardian before he got the job announced. And, you know, he was making the point that, look, he got the Ireland job, he took them to the knockout stages of Euro 2016, eliminated France. He also took them to the qualifying playoffs for the last World Cup at the expense of the Welsh side who had reached the Euro 2016 semi-finals. He's faced criticism from the Irish media about his style of play, whereas Forrest have taken the alternative view that he inherited the least talented group of players the country has produced for many years and in fact overachieved. They went to a major tournament, they beat Italy and they beat Germany, the world champions, in the process. Mm. That is a very easy narrative to sell to the Nottingham Forest hierarchy, who won't have heard the nitty-gritty of our issues with the Ireland.
No, they won't. They probably won't care.
They won't care that much. But that is how he's perceived across the water. And it's a justifiable argument as well.
In his case.
It totally is. Mm. So I'd be very interested to see how he does day-to-day at club level, where maybe the lack of preparation isn't as damaging as when a team just comes together every 2 or 3 months. Now, who knows?
Karanka, in terms of his preparation, I'm not sure he's Bielsa kind of level in terms of the preparation, the detail, but the team play in a very structured manner.
Okay.
So they will be used to a level of detail going to each and every game. What I would say is, if he does go down the road of the way he traditionally types to manage and
name the team an hour before and all that stuff.
Look, they're a talented team, talented squad.
Yeah.
I'd be amazed if they aren't in and around the playoffs, because they already are. They should be. Mm. I would imagine 2 weeks left in the transfer and they will have a few shekels to go and spend. So you would imagine Nottingham Forest should do well for the remainder of the season. I would be surprised if they don't.
Yeah.
Damien Duff gone to Celtic, kind of knew anyway, but he started 10 days ago on the press yesterday. I think it's a great move for his development, and it's something that he's clearly taken to, the role of nurturing young talent. Mm. Some criticism thrown at him in the way he does it, the levels that he makes the young players train at when he was managing the 15-16s of Shamrock Rovers. I've been down to watch him train and the atmospheres that he generated, the standards that he sets, and those players drastically improved.
no doubt.
Under his watch.
Yeah.
Was very popular at Shamrock Rovers, and he'll be a miss. But for his personal development, brilliant.
It struck me looking at Duff and the way he was going about his business, as in wanting the players to train every day, and his frustration at the lack of time players were training over in this part of the world was very apparent. It actually struck me that sooner rather than later, he belonged over in the UK, where it's an industry. And he was just going to meet too many obstacles here, which is a pity, and it's a question for another day about how we're doing things here. But actually, the way he was talking about what 15-year-olds need to do, it was obvious that he was going to have issues here, and he needed to go over there, where now he's going to be in an environment where he's surrounded by players who want to make it as professionals.
And he's going to relish it, I think.
Whereas I would say there were some at Shamrock Rovers who just wanted to play for Shamrock Rovers. They weren't thinking about necessarily.
But he was changing the mentality of it. But you're right, in terms of the obstacles, in terms of national leagues, people have, you know, sports scientists wanting to know, no, that's enough training, where obviously I'm the same age as Damien. The way we got there was by training every single day, playing on the pitches every single day. And certainly for him, when you look at the type of footballer he was a street footballer. So he believes that that element should be incorporated into the development of young players.
And he certainly doesn't want 3 months of an off-season. So
minimum, I think.
Yeah, so he'd just be banging. I think he'd be banging his head against the wall here. So it's great. And what I'm really interested to see with Duff is if working with young players is fulfilling enough, and that's what he gets his kicks out of, or if in 4 or 5 years he thinks, actually, I now want to make another step up and manage a senior side.
Well, let's have a look. He was speaking in the last 24 hours or so. Let's hear what Damien had to say.
I feel like I'm learning the game all over again. The minute you stand on a touchline, it's totally different, totally different viewpoint. So I'm only a baby. I'm a year and a half, 2 years in. So yeah, it's a massive role, but I'm going to embrace it. And even away from the pitch, just getting into the lads' heads, what it takes to be a footballer. I think across the board, not Celtic, but in England, Ireland, Scotland, lads just do enough. And they think just doing enough is going to get you to be a footballer, but it's not. You have to do more than enough every day and empty the tank. And you know, it's just that obsession. I would have done anything when I was a kid, 16, to be a footballer. I'd have run over my granny, you know. But that's what it is. It's being that mongrel. And I said, away from the pitch, teaching them that. On the pitch, I said, I'm learning, but I'll help them all I can out there. I'm on them 24/7. Out there, I'm full on, I'm passionate, I'm emotional. So once they realise it's not me just being a pain, it's just because I care and I want to help.
I mean, that's the key for him as well, getting that level of, you know, daily with those players, portraying what's needed for a career. Some of them you need to push, others you need to actually bring back a little bit. The way they do it at Celtic, you know there's going to be a pathway to the first team. It'd be different if you maybe, you know, if we read, look, he's gone to Man City as the 23s coach, or Liverpool, Man United, brilliant, but do players come through there? Very, very rarely. I think there's a real pathway there.
It's really, it's an attractive option, Celtic, actually, now for young Irish players.
I agree. You'd imagine that's going to increase now for other reasons.
Yeah, you really do have a chance. Like Niall Quinn used the phrase the other week when he was talking about sorting out the League of Ireland. He was saying, like, the notion of getting the boat over, well, the boat, you know, he was talking metaphorically, but getting the boat over to a Premier League club now. He's like, that's crazy. That's pie in the sky was the phrase he used. Yeah. That's like the thought that you're going to make it through a Premier League team. Yeah. They were slim 20 years ago. Now it's like, you're joking.
Yeah.
So Celtic is an option. Mm.
And if you mentioned there before, we showed the clip. Yeah. If he does continue to relish this level in terms of age, 2, 3, 4 years there, or if he moves on, imagine then bringing him back with that experience back into the international fold for our younger players. Mm. Will be just priceless.
21's manager.
Priceless. Yeah. It would be amazing to get someone of his ilk with the experience that he's going to go and get. Or it may well whet his appetite to kick on and go and forge a managerial career or become an assistant to Brendan or whatever. Mm. I'm sure he's not in any rush to do that. As he's already said, he's just a baby in terms of learning the next stage. But we wish him well.
Yeah.
Where are we going next? Are we going to the bottom of the Premier League, Joe?
Yes, apparently we are.
Bottom of the Premier League, I said right from the off, Huddersfield and Cardiff would go down. I just felt the job that he'd done at Huddersfield last year, David Wagner, to get them up in the first place, then to keep them up was literally miraculous.
Yeah.
I thought it was quite sad this week to see him leave. There was a penalty decision last week at Cardiff that went against him. The decision got turned over.
Yeah, well, he had a go at Lee Mason, a big go, which was uncharacteristic of him. But that was a sign, I think, of the stress he's under. They literally can't score a goal.
No, Mooney.
Nobody to score, yeah. He got them up into the Premier League with a net spend of £3 million. Now, Villa, that same season, had a net spend of £40 million. So he really did do miraculous things, and then to stay up.
With style, by the way.
Yeah. They beat Man United in that first year up. They drew with Man City. They drew with Chelsea.
Phenomenal. And you probably haven't been there, have you? The atmosphere, and I know the lads were talking.
It comes across on TV.
Damien Delaney last night about Sellers Park when they first got promoted. It would have been the same with Liam Lawrence when they first got promoted with Stoke. Mm. The atmosphere in that stadium, the Johnson, is phenomenal.
Every day is a cup final.
Yeah, and every single time you go there, I've probably commentated there 5-6 times in the last 2 years, and with the promotion season, I was there quite a lot. They love it.
Yeah.
It's like, come in. Like, it's just the excitement is just running through their veins. They are loving it.
Yeah.
Really fear for them now. Really, really fear for them, because Allardyce came out during the week and he's basically saying, wouldn't touch it with a barge pole. I don't see how they're getting out of the division. Yeah. I don't see them getting out of it. But what I think they need to put in place is somebody that's going to go, okay, we're going to go down, we're going to rebuild, we're going to have a structure, we're going to use the parachute payments very, very wisely in terms of the structure of the club, and do it in the right way to hopefully bounce back and become sustainable, to ready to mount the challenge. Because you look at the way Sunderland last couple of years, Stoke even last year, the way they've gone, when the fundamentals aren't right in the football club, I think they are with Huddersfield.
Yeah.
The owner, Dean Hoyle, is a good fella. They had a really good man in place, and I think it was a very...
It was a classy statement.
It was,
yeah, no, it was good. It was, and I think it was sincere as well. So are you flipping Newcastle and Cardiff, and that's your bottom three?
Can I get it back up? Yeah, I'm worried for Fulham. I've seen Fulham in the last two games against Arsenal New Year's Day and last week at Burnley, and they worry me. They worry me defensively. There's an argument to be made they should have got something from the game against Burnley last weekend, where Sherla scored a worldie. Did you see it? Oh, did you not see it, Joe?
No.
Andre Sherla's goal last week.
No.
Run in behind, touches it over his shoulder, kills it dead, sets himself and just buries it into the top corner past Tommy. It was one of the best goals I've seen live. It was outstanding.
Okay, I'll have a look.
But defensively, they really, really worry me. So they went up with a real style, real panache in terms of how they played. Obviously, Jurcanovic stayed, tried to play the same way. Now Ranieri's trying to get some kind of balance of keeping the back door short but still posing a threat on forward. The squad he's got, I think they need to sign 2 or 3 in January. Okay. Solid type citizens. Newcastle would worry me as well. I think Burnley will be fine. They've won 3 in a row now, which has propelled them up that table. And Hassan Hoodle at Southampton, I think, has done a really good job so far. He's made them a little bit more difficult to break down. They look more resilient. They look like they've got more energy in how they play.
I mean, I haven't seen much. I saw them against City over Christmas, and you could see they're a team who have a real plan now.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they were impressive against City.
They've got a decent squad,
though,
Joe. They're all right.
They'll be okay.
So, yeah, I think it'll be in and around Cardiff. Definitely, Huddersfield, and Fulham or Newcastle. Depending on who they sign, obviously, but you're not going to rule it out with Rafa. He's just going to pull rabbits out of hats, go on a little run of winning 3 out of 4 or 4 out of 6 to propel them out of that danger and do it. And Mike Ashley's the hero again.
Well, he spent £50 million of his own money.
Right, we're just going to have a little look at the fixtures for the coming weekend. Wolves, Leicester, Liverpool, Palace, Watford, Burnley, IMAT. So we'll get to see some of the Irish players again. Jeff Hendrick actually played right wing, compact, right-sided player, and he played very, very well last weekend against Fulham. He was gambling off second balls off the front too. He was heavily involved in both goals that they scored. Robbie Brady suspended, itching to get back. I bumped into him in the press lounge last week, and he was just itching to get going after his red card. Obviously, Kevin Long was sub unused, and Stephen Ward is just coming back from injury.
Man City have a lot of games after Liverpool these days, don't they?
Yeah,
it's an extra little bit of pressure.
Yeah. But they're dealing with it
yeah.
fairly well, aren't they?
Ah, yeah, well, the Wolves game was done after 15
minutes.
It's
easy, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Easy. So, yeah, some big games top and bottom. Arsenal against Chelsea, obviously, Saturday late kickoff should be a decent game. Arsenal are going through a bit of a tricky little spell, aren't they?
Yeah.
and the Chelsea kind of who's staying, who's going, Hudson-Odoi, Hazard constantly linked. Morata's obviously looks like he's leaving. Higuain looks like he's
Chelsea
possibly
just,
coming in.
Chelsea just,
it's just Chelsea, though, isn't
irritate
it?
Me as a club. I've given up them. I don't care. And I don't care if they win a league and then disappear again for 3-4 seasons. That's
just them.
I just don't care. I don't care what they do anymore. Mm. They're just an awful club in every way. It's
an awful club.
Their fans this season, it's just soulless, Chelsea. The whole thing is, do you know what? If Chelsea, for me, are the perfect example of the route that football could go down and it would just completely ruin the game.
You're on about money-wise?
Money-wise, it's soulless. It's full of mercenaries. Mm. It's run badly.
Players?
The managers come in and out. Like, there's nothing about Chelsea that you can get behind or care about. Mm. Like, they won a league 2 years ago and the whole place is falling apart. They'll probably win a league again in 2 or 3 years. Mm. I just don't care anymore.
Do you not? You're that bad with it?
No, there's something about Chelsea that I just find...
it's not exactly pure, is it?
Oh, no, like no. But Man City's not pure, but I'm very interested in what they're doing and I find it very interesting. Like, most of the clubs aren't pure now. But there's just something about Chelsea where it's all so meaningless, no matter what they do.
Well, that stems right from the top, obviously, in terms of how ruthless he is.
Yeah. There's no identity about Chelsea. There's nothing to them anymore. They're the most vacuous club. They are what football is in danger of becoming in 10 years' time.
Even in terms of the loan system and the amount of players they have out on loan.
Everything about
just
it.
Just everything. It's just all of the above.
It's just this soulless, vacuous industry that stands for nothing. You know, and ugh.
Really?
Honestly, I really don't like
Since
them.
When?
The last 2-3 years. Do you know the post-Conte season?
Right. That was only last year.
I know, yeah, but...
Sorry. This year Sarri came
in
somewhere.
But even when Conte was winning the league, I knew it was going to fall apart. It was boring. It was just...
Boring? They weren't boring in his first year.
No, I'm talking about the whole
story and the way the club is, right?
Yeah,
right.
I didn't care. When Mourinho was there, I thought it was amazing.
Second time?
No, less so the second time. Right. But that first time, I thought, this is fantastic.
Because they haven't done anything yet.
Yeah, exactly. But now, I just can't bring myself to care about them at all. Mm.
Like watching them now?
No, that's what I mean. If they're on, I don't want to watch them.
Really?
Yeah, I'm interested in Sarri to a point. There's just something about Chelsea.
But even that started to rightly turn me off, isn't it?
Yeah.
What about Arsenal?
Yeah, I mean, Arsenal have an identity.
I'm a bit sad for Emery.
But he'll turn it around. Like, he was very impressed. He's been very impressive. Like, the way they stuck by Wenger, I appreciate.
Commendable.
They were for financial reasons as well, and he was ticking a box, and the shareholders are very happy. But it was commendable, and there was an identity, and Emery has come in and made a really good impression and conducted himself well.
Totally agree.
And they stand for something. What do Chelsea stand for?
Yeah.
What's their style of play? What are they?
Well, it flits from season to season, obviously,
exactly.
Because of...
I just don't care.
Yeah.
Because Sarri will be gone in 18 months, and someone else come in with the same old nonsense.
Mm.
Abramovich is a non-existent owner at this stage. He can't even get into the country.
Oh, I know. He's exiled.
So I just find Chelsea a non-entity in English football. They're just irrelevant to me. I don't care about them. Don't tell Pat Nevin I said that.
So yeah, he loves them, doesn't he?
Well, I just don't think they're worth talking about.
But you're going to say that's Pat at all?
No, I mean, when
how
Pat's
strong
on,
would you go with Pat? Like, he definitely won't be listening to this. So
I'd be like, Pat, let's talk Chelsea. Look, obviously you have to talk about them. This is just a personal. Like when you said Arsenal Chelsea was on, I was like,
really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Right, tomorrow I'm at Norwich Birmingham, and
no, I prefer Chelsea
Saturday.
To Norwich and Birmingham. Don't get me wrong.
Whoa! Don't be slagging my championship. And Saturday Watford Burnley. So
okay.
Good weekend. And then Bolton Villa on Monday.
Sounds great.
Bolton fans would be delighted to see me.
Oh, did you say you had a go at Bolton recently, did you?
Not a go, I was just honest again, Joe.
What did you say?
Honestly, it's not really liked in this day and age, is it?
In short, no, it's not. In short, what did you say about Bolton?
Regretted signing there.
Okay, yeah. Oh, that's different. That's
fairly short after signing, and the current state of affairs, the way the football club's been run is fairly unsavoury.
Is it?
Yeah.
I didn't realise that. In what way?
You'll be watching on Monday anyway, won't you?
No, I'll be in here.
Yeah, but you can still watch. Well, stick subtitles on Monday. You can kind of multitask, right?
To get the Keith Andrews.
You have Kevin.
I don't know. I mean, we...
It's been a more frequent visitor lately.
He has lately, yeah. With Kevin Kilbane, you turn up and at 5 to 7 you find out if Kev's in or not. It's a bit harsh. It's not quite true.
10-7
I don't know. I don't know if he's in or not. It depends. He's a busy man. He's a lot going on.
He is. He's a busy bookle. Busy bookle. Right. That's all we got time for. Thanks.
Do you get what I mean about Chelsea?
Yeah, I agree in terms of when we're talking about United in terms of the way they play. In terms of your football club, who you love, who you grew up watching, and you have to keep some of your DNA, morals. That's the way the football club is run, regardless of managerial changes or not. So yeah, I do get what you're saying.
Okay.
But then there's also an element of me, because I've no emotion invested in Chelsea. There's an element of me where this is great. Like every 2 years, we've got a different story with Chelsea. You're looking at it in terms of Conte, three at the back, Sarri ball, Mourinho before that, and like next year, like Sarri could get a pain in his backside, couldn't he, and just walk in the next few months, and because he strikes me like that type. Someone else comes in, so there's that element of me that keeps me intrigued by them. But I agree in terms of.
I find it so chop and changey. It's not intriguing anymore.
Mm.
That's almost my point.
Yeah.
It's just so pointless.
Mm.
So even if Sarri wins the league, it's pointless because he's gone in a year.
There's
nothing being built there ever.
Yeah.
That's actually the issue. There is no significance to anything they do because it could fall apart the following month.
Mm.
So whether Sarri wins the league or finishes fifth, it's pointless because he's gone in 18 months.
So if you were Hudson-Odoi, you'd go to Bayern Munich in a heartbeat.
In a heartbeat.
Mm.
Now there is a club with an identity
and
who know what they're about.
What we should say before we go is that the food in the press lounge at Chelsea is nothing short of phenomenal.
So I hear.
Phenomenal. I bet you heard that of Nathan Murphy.
Primarily.
Yeah, thought so. On that note, Joe, thank you.
Thanks,
much appreciated. That's all we got time for this week. We shall be back at the usual time of next week. Until then, take care.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.